Hello and welcome back to the second hour of Eye on the Ball here on 1030 KVOI. I'm Steve Rivera, your host. We just had Reggie Geary in for the first hour. Now we have Led Legend Bob Elliott. Good afternoon, Bob. Great to see you. You look good, too.
You got a little Kenny Loggins going?
He's my guy. Back in 79, this used to be the Shining Moment song.
Right.
Back in your day, kind of, your time, your era.
I was gone 2 years before that.
Yeah. Good. Just kind of bring back some memories. You've been 40 years, or how much is it, 40 years since you played?
I came here in 73. 46 years ago.
I ask the guys every time they're in, does it feel like 20, 30 years now? And does it feel like that 40-some years?
Let's put it this way, Steve. Okay, I've got two grandkids that are playing college sports.
Really?
And a god-granddaughter that's playing at Utah.
Wow.
So that's when you know. Okay, you've been gone for a little while. You know, I'll run to people on the street. They're like, Bob, you know, can you suit up? Can you play? I said, listen, when you got grandkids playing in college, I know I have no reason to be out on the court.
Right. No, that puts it into perspective. You're right. No, that's funny. But you're young. You look good. The last time we saw you and I talked to you, you were getting inducted to the Pac-12 Hall of Fame.
Right.
That was a great time for you, an emotional time for you.
Well, you know, what really made it more emotional than normal, as I was telling you before we went back on air. So about 3 years ago, I was diagnosed with a rare neurological disease called CIDP, chronic inflammatory demyelinating polyneuropathy. I thank Dr. Song over at the Center for Neurosciences who found it. And part of the treatment to get rid of the inflammation is to put you on prednisone. So there's a lot of people out there that have been on prednisone. I was on 80 milligrams a day for 3 months in a row. So with prednisone, two things happen. One is you blow up.
You were puffy.
I was past puffy.
Yeah.
You know, it looked like somebody stuck an air hose in me, just
yes.
threw it out there.
You did not look like the Bob I knew.
No, and at the same time, you lose weight because the inflammation is leaving your body. That was one part. The second part is prednisone, and again, anybody on it knows, it becomes an emotional drug.
Oh.
You have highs and lows. So the neurologist was very good to get me to understand that, okay, watch your emotions. Not so much on the downside where,
depression hit or what, yeah.
Yeah. Or just, you know, I would hear like a song or something, just start crying. You know, Hallmark became a problem because at every end of every movie, I'm sitting there crying.
Yeah.
But on the other side, I was not the guy to hit me in my car at that time. Because you lose control, and you just jump out of the car, and you're ready to pick the car up and everybody around.
Yeah.
So it makes you real emotional. Because when our boy Javi Morales hit me, and he was filming it.
Sure.
He asked me about the jersey.
I was there. So, I was there.
And I'm like, hey, no, couldn't handle it.
Yeah. When did you see the video of it? Saying, holy. Look,
on Facebook. Well, first thing, people were commenting.
We were going through it. I saw it. I witnessed it.
Yeah, people said, that doesn't look like Bob Elliott.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I understand. I was puffier than that a month or two before that.
Wow. So, no, when you saw the video, did you say, that's not me? Or
oh, it's me.
In terms of emotions.
Oh, no. You know, I'm an emotional person anyhow, but you throw that prednisone in you, forget it.
Yeah.
You have no control.
Right. Did it even surprise you what you saw in terms of your emotions or your abilities?
No, because, I mean, like I said, I was on a flight from Dallas, okay? And I'm listening to my iPod, and I got about an 85, 90-year-old gentleman sitting next to me on the plane, and a song came on to remind me of my dad. I lost it.
Yeah.
I'm doing the Oprah ugly cry, okay? And I see this dude is looking at me. He's looking up. He's looking up at that button you can push to get the flight attendant's attention. Because you can tell he was kind of like saying, if this dude goes off, I'm not messing with him. It's just you have no control. None.
Right. Well, that's putting things in pretty – you're funny. That's pretty funny. I get that. I totally get that. So good to see you. Do you feel familiar behind a mic? It's good to see you behind a mic. You know, back in the day, 10, 20 years ago, when you were doing the games, you were doing the games and having fun.
I did TV, radio for 29 years. At the same time, trying to have a tax practice. But, you know, when you're young, you don't know any better.
Right.
I didn't realize how much time I was spending on the basketball games until I didn't have to do it anymore. And it's more than just to travel.
Sure.
Pullman's a nightmare.
Oh, I've been there too many times.
Yeah.
Yes.
You have to get there the day before. That's an all day.
Mm-hmm.
You got to, so now you lose 3 days in the office. All day, the one day to get there, all day, the day of the game, all day to get back.
Mm-hmm. No, and the cold, it, sometimes it's not easy to get there.
Oh, yeah.
The
exactly.
delays
exactly.
And all that. We've been there many times.
And the prep work.
Yeah.
See, that's what you don't understand.
In fact, I wanted to see if I can pick your brain on a story that you and I talked about when I was doing one of my first books. Dave Sitton was in the car.
Yep.
The great Dave Sitton. I mean,
yes.
We miss him probably a lot more than we know.
Hey, you don't, because see, Dave and I, people say, oh, you guys have a great chemistry. That chemistry evolved starting in 1973 at Graham Hall. We're both freshmen. The basketball players were on the first floor. The baseball players on the second floor.
Yeah. No, we had a great discussion. I think we were going to a game. You were driving, Dave Sitton, passenger or vice versa.
That's right.
And I was in the back listening to some stories, laughing. You were talking about, and Dave could tell a story better than anybody, you know, this
Yes.
You were talking about the Utah game, I think it was, on the bomb threat. Was it Utah?
Oh, well, okay. Pullman
was
a situation where there were four cars, all of us leaving Pullman, driving on that two-lane highway to get back to Spokane.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the second of the four cars, okay? It's kind of winding. We go through this little town. I see a police officer on the right. No biggie. We're all going probably about 62.
And you couldn't go. That's 55. A speed trap, too. They love.
So I look in my rearview mirror. I see the police officer pull out. I'm like, okay, let's see what's going on. He goes past the other two folks in our caravan. I'm the second of four. He tells me, pull over. I see him get out of his car, and I can see his body language. I said, Dave, listen to me. Don't say anything. Don't do anything. That doesn't work with Dave. You know, Dave, the police officer says, you know, roll your window down. And the first thing Dave says, officer, what's the problem? You know? He said, hey, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to him, and you end up going to jail with him if you don't shut up, right?
Uh-huh.
So the guy takes my license, everything. In the end, he writes me up for going 77 in a 55.
Behind the caravan? You were already in the caravan?
Oh, yeah. Everybody else left.
Yeah.
And I said, Dave, what you have just – and he was hot. What's going on? I said, man, will you just be quiet? Don't say anything. I said, you just experienced what's called DWB. And I said the story at Dave's funeral, driving while black. And, you know, Dave is hardcore America.
Yeah.
Right. And red and white flag, everything. He couldn't believe it. But that right there told me something. You know, until you've experienced it, you don't know what it's like.
Right, right. No, I remember those were great stories. I think they did
in Utah. The bomb deal.
The bomb deal. Let's go to break and we'll talk about the bomb deal because we're not going to have any of this. Let's get out the court.
Oh no.
Yeah, yeah. Let's take a break, Tom, and come back and talk some basketball and fun experiences with Bob Elliott.
Lito missed the boat that day. He left the shack, but that was all.
This is Jeff Michael Elefante, and I have an idea for your business. Take your client to lunch, at Mama Luisa's, of course. They'll be impressed by our pasta bar, cooked to their preference, right in front of them. Or try our famous Joe special, with hot pepper seeds, garlic and oil, and topped with cheese and baked to perfection. You'll get their business and some great food. Mama Luisa's.
Since 1956, Mama Luisa's has thrilled your palate with great Italian food. And we cater. 2041 South Craycroft, 790-4702.
The Tucson Symphony Orchestra is proud to present Kristen Chenoweth. Don't miss this Tony, Emmy, and People's Choice Award winner as she performs music spanning her Broadway, film, and television careers. From Wicked and You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, to her featured roles in television's Glee and Pushing Daisies, Kristen Chenoweth's amazing operatic voice and seductive charm have enthralled audiences on stage and screen alike. The New York Daily News calls it a whole lot of wonderful, just like Chenoweth. Reserve your tickets now for this one-night-only event. Kristen Chenoweth in concert with the Tucson Symphony Orchestra. Thursday, January 17th at 7:30 in the Tucson Music Hall. Brought to you in partnership with the Tucson Desert Song Festival. Tickets at 882-8585 or tucsonsymphony.org.
Sick of hearing America run down? Tired of divisive political attacks? Tune into America's Fabric and its positive message of what's good about America. America's Fabric expresses the truth that the fabric of a free government is woven from its citizens' knowledge and moral fiber. Listen to America's Fabric on KVOI, Sunday mornings at 8 a.m.
Trusted local news and talk, AM 1030, KVOI. We have our eye on entertainment.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Steve Rivera, and this is Eye on the Ball here on 1030 KVOI. I'm talking with Bob Elliott, the legend Bob Elliott. Fantastically great, a great career you had here. Do you often look back at it, or is it, I've lived it, we talk about it a lot, and you just kind of just don't talk about it anymore?
You know, it's a cliche that what really comes out of your experiences with sports teams, it's not the wins and losses, it's not the scoring and the rebounds or the records. It's the relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like the other day,
ones, yeah.
Gary Harrison, mm-hmm. okay, who he and I go back to high school,
Michigan
and
days.
Eighth grade, even going around playing basketball together back in the Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti area.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's those are things that last a lifetime. Well, it's a relationship.
Did you have a conversation with him? What was the deal with Harrison? What do you mean?
Gary
you mean?
Was just elected Pima County Clerk.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Second African-American to win an election in this area. The first was Chuck Ford, who became a city councilman.
Mm-hmm.
But Gary's the first African-American to win an election in the county level.
I didn't know that. I have to talk to him. I'll have to find him, and you have to find him for me, and I'll have him on the show. So let's go back to the drive in Pullman, but let's go back to the game at Utah for the bomb scare.
Nuts.
Replay that game because it was the way you guys tell it was very funny.
Well, first of all, there was a lot of history between us and Utah. A lot of history.
Back in 74 or 75?
That's right. You know, so they came down. I think we went to their place first, and they beat us by maybe 21.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, hey, you come to our place, we're going to beat you by more than 21. And we did. They tried to stall at the end just to not let us have attempts at the basket.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't work. So up there, I think it was my senior year or junior year, they're beating us by 15, about a minute and a half left to play. There's a timeout, and the PA announcer comes on and says, ladies and gentlemen, at the conclusion of tonight's game, please leave the arena as quickly as possible. A bomb threat's been called in. And I looked at Coach Snowden. And we're on the air, so I can't say exactly what I said. But I'm like, bottom line, I'm out of here. Y'all can stay up in here if you want to. Because the people already called us every name in the book and everything. I said, I'm out of here.
And you're down by 15.
Down by 15. And I remember I started walking. My wife was at the game. I motioned her. I said, come on, let's go. Miss
mm-hmm.
Snowden was like, if Bobby's leaving, I'm leaving. So all of us start walking off the floor. Right? You had to go through the floor to get to the locker room to get your stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I remember Coach is like, what you doing? I said, Coach, did you hear the announcement? Who cares about this game? Okay? Bomb threat?
Right.
You want to sit around? So Coach is like, no. I said, then let's go.
Yeah.
So we got up and left, and even the officials finally got to their senses and said, you know what? Call the game. Not a forfeit. Game ends at this point. Everybody get out of here so everybody's safe.
Yeah, yeah. But you'd never see that. I don't know if you see that today. What do you think? I don't think so. You'd actually have to go through the minute. They would announce it.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, nowadays you got social media. So can you imagine the films and stuff on social media if something like that? Hey, Arizona walks off the floor.
Right, right, right. What happened here? Well, it's a bomb scare.
Yeah.
Would you stay?
Yeah. I said no.
Right.
This
right.
doesn't make sense. It's not that important to play this game when
sure.
you got a bomb threat, okay?
Sure, sure. We can go back to a lot of those different games. The run you guys had in the tournament, I guess eventually losing to UNLV, 75-76?
Yeah, lost to UCLA.
You beat UNLV.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a huge game.
Yeah, major, major.
Huge
that
game.
Was the first time an Arizona team had made it to the Elite Eight.
Mm-hmm.
And I still, when I would see a guy named Gary Cunningham, he used to be an assistant coach at UCLA,
yes.
became
mm-hmm.
an athletic administration. He was the one that was in charge of recruiting me for Coach Wooden. And I would see him later on. I'm a young man. I said, how does UCLA get to host a regional when you guys have won 10 out of the last 12 national championships?
Right, right.
Why don't you just mail the damn thing in?
That's how they want it.
I didn't mean to say that.
They were good. They were good, but.
Yeah. How do you get to host a regional?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it just didn't make sense to me. And we had them, maybe about 6 minutes to go. It was a tie game, but, you know, at that point it was over. But that was huge for us to even get there because UNLV,
right.
the first game in that regional, they were rated number 3 in the nation.
Yeah. It was 100 and whatever it was, 115, 120.
I want to say 114, 109. No threes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The good old whack days.
And no shot clock.
Yeah, the good old whack days.
Yeah.
New Mexico's when they score 100 points, you guys would score 100 points. Vegas was all that all the time.
Right.
The program at the time, how would you describe it, the U of A program? Because it was up and coming and it was pretty good at the time.
Yes, I know part of the reason why I wrote the book Tucson, a Basketball Town, mm-hmm. was because I don't think that Coach Snowden had received his due credit for what he did about basketball in Tucson. So when Coach Snowden got hired here, which you got to give major kudos to Dr. John Schaefer, who was mm-hmm. the president at the time, mm-hmm. and Dave Strack was athletic director, they went ahead, hired the first black to be a head coach in Division I at a major university, major conference. First black overall is a guy named Coach Will,
mm-hmm.
Will Robinson, who actually came from Detroit Pershing High School. He was coaching Indiana State. And his first year coaching, he had Dud Collins at mm-hmm. Illinois State.
Yeah.
But to sit there and make that move, because as Dr. Schaefer said, okay, I've become the president of the University of Arizona. I'm 36 years old. My predecessor decides to build a 14,000-seat arena across from Bear Down. Bear Down held about 3,000 people, mm-hmm. and they were getting less than 1,000. They hire Coach Snowden. They're selling out Bear Down.
Mm-hmm.
Mid-season, they move over to McHale without an established season ticket base. Sold that out also.
Right, right.
Our group came in the following year. Herm Harris, Len Gordy, Gary Harrison, Jerome Gladney, Jay Gelmacher. We came in the following year, and our job was to fit in with the guys that were there, the kiddie core.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we tried to take it to another level.
And people still talk about that. The Browns, Rappus, those Herm Harris,
mm-hmm.
still talk about it, how fun it was to watch the games.
Yeah, we were up and down. I mean, the worst thing at that time, and we didn't get as bad as like UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
So UCLA had like the Bill Walton era,
mm-hmm.
no shot clock. So I remember some game, I think it was Oregon against UCLA. Oregon jumped out to a 6-point lead. And they held the ball almost the entire rest of the game. Final score, 18-16, something like that, UCLA.
Sure.
You know, you could do things like that.
Yeah.
We only had that happen once to us, and UTEP did that to us.
Mm-hmm.
They
well,
got up by 8, and they just held the ball. You know, we're sitting there telling the guys at your garden, go ahead, man. Just go. Go ahead. I'll let you go.
Yeah, we want the ball back.
Want the ball back.
Yeah, hopefully you'll miss. Yeah, that's horrible basketball.
Yeah.
But at the time, and then you talked about it a lot in your book, you know, had there not been Freddie.
Yeah.
Party would not have been loot.
I tell you what, no Fred Snowden, you and I are not sitting here right now in Tucson, Arizona, having this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I can say that without a doubt.
Yeah, yeah. He, I think, as time passed, and he's been gone, I don't know, 20 years. I'm just estimating here.
Yeah, I think it was 90. I think it was 94.
Yeah, I remember that.
Died.
We were in L.A. at the time, and I know
yeah.
that that George Colo flew back for the
mm-hmm.
funeral and things like that, but. As time progressed and he's been gone, has he, when people talk, do you think he's become a better coach or more appreciated as time passed? You know how that happens?
You know, as time moves on, the memories fade.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to, you know, believe that. And I know it happens with myself, too. You know, living in Tucson, because my wife and I made that decision.
Memories fade, but the stories get better because they get, you know.
No question.
Back in the day, I scored 50 or whatever. But go ahead.
And it's just that, you know, I just don't think he got his fair due for what he did to start this. Mm-hmm. I truly believe that Coach Olson would not have come here if Fred hadn't have lit the fire.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing to relight a fire, mm-hmm. as Coach Olson did, and he took it to another level, mm-hmm. which is what a program should be, okay? And since Sean Miller should take it to a level past what Coach Olson did.
Mm-hmm.
But if Coach Olson didn't see an opportunity here where the fire was lit before,
mm-hmm.
I remember talking to him back when he was trying to make that decision. And I said, no, it was crazy here. Pandemonium. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's a great opportunity. You could have gone to ASU.
Mm-hmm.
A coach like Bill Frieder, great coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
Best he ever did was average 9,000 in attendance in a 14,000 seat arena.
Right.
Fire had never been lit.
Right. Right. Back in the day, it was full most of the time. It was,
oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Your biggest, and I don't know this. I don't know why I'm asking the question, but back in the day, who was your biggest rival, legitimate rival, not ASU or whatever, but I'm sure that was a rival too. But
oh, ASU was a legitimate, because matter of fact, my 4 years here, when he lost two home games.
Mm-hmm. To who?
Both the ASU.
Both the ASU. Okay, so they were. Well, tell me, the rivalry then was as crazy as it is now? It's not. And I'm talking about the hatred, not so much the competition.
Steve, coming from Ann Arbor, Michigan, okay, I have seen rivalries. Michigan, Ohio State, and football, mm-hmm. right? It was about the game.
Mm-hmm.
Here, I remember my freshman year, we're warming up, and I look, and it's like once the game started, nobody was looking at the court. The two sides of fans were like jawing at each other. It's like everything was going above your head.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Until there's a minute left to see who's ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a true, I hate to use the word hatred.
Yeah.
But it was obvious that there's a major issue here between Tucson and Phoenix. Forget University of Arizona and Arizona State.
Right. It still kind of feels that way, don't you think?
Yeah. I remember talking to Jerry Colangelo about it once, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, there's no issue. Well, see, he's up in Phoenix, Maricopa County. You know, think about the elections, okay? Maricopa County, known high in Republicans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pima County, Tucson, high in Democrats. But when you got a million people down in our metropolis, uh-huh. and who knows how many millions up in Phoenix, just do the math.
Right, right.
They're huge.
There's no chance.
Mm-mm.
That's funny. When you're one-sided, you don't think there's the other side.
No.
Yeah. So after ASU, who was the next one in line?
I think it would almost depend on the year. That first year here, New Mexico had one heck of a team.
Mm-hmm.
And then that second year, well, New Mexico again, because that's when Michael Cooper came into New Mexico.
He was a freshman, I think, at that time.
Yeah, because, you know, he's well documented for talking,
mm-hmm.
right? And think about the Lakers and the Celtics back in the day. You got the two biggest talkers, Michael Cooper, the Lakers, and Larry Bird on the Celtics, going at it.
Yeah.
I mean, Larry used to sit there and frustrate you because, you know, I always said Larry Bird was the guy. He'd be the first one out of the blocks on the 60-yard dash. He'd be the last one to the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
He was extremely quick, and his basketball IQ was, like, off the charts.
Sure, sure.
So I was guarding up Robert Parrish. I go to double Bird like I'm supposed to, and Larry would throw a pass that went right by my ear, and he'd say, your man just dunked. You turn around and look.
Right.
Now who looks stupid? You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. No, he was phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. So Arizona, they had also had Cooper. They had Marvin Johnson back in the day when they took, they were very good. I was a kid back then when I watched the games because I'm from Northern New Mexico. So I remember those teams very, very well. And they scored points. You guys scored points. They scored points.
Oh,
it was the good old days of the WAC.
Yeah, it was the WAC, Wild West.
The Wild West. Let's go to break here and we'll talk more about you and your career and some of the things that happened and haven't happened yet, here at Arizona.
Hello, Tucson. John and Cheryl Holcock of Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage with your real estate news. Home inventory continues to be low. Home prices have stabilized or are slowly increasing. And mortgage rates, although rising, remain historically low. So call 520-342-6586 for all your real estate needs.
Honey, what are you doing?
I'm practicing my radio news voice.
Who do you think you are, Ed Alexander?
No, but he is.
Hey, John, Cheryl, hey.
Oh, hey, Ed.
Really, honey? At the CMA Foundation, we believe every child should have the access and opportunity to participate in quality music programs. Music education isn't just important if you're going to make it your career. It helps boost student engagement and achievement across all academic subjects and helps children develop the abilities that set them up for lifelong success. Music has always been a huge part of my life. When I started taking clarinet lessons in sixth grade band, a whole world was open to me. I learned how to read music and play multiple instruments. From there, I sang in choir and learned about melodies and harmonies and chords and how to string them together to make this beautiful thing called music. The music education that I received as a student set me up for success as an adult, not just in my career, but in my life. Music is transformative, and I want to ensure that it's never silenced. Learn how you can help support music education at itstartswithme.org.
I was searching for a way to stop using drugs. I reached out and found Narcotics Anonymous. I went to my first NA meeting and didn't know what to expect. Supported by recovering addicts, I realized that I was not alone. I heard them talk about feelings that I was afraid to talk about, and recovery from drug addiction, something I was afraid to dream about. It is possible to stop using drugs.
Call Narcotics Anonymous. We can help. 881-8381. That's 881-8381.
Have a time.
Hammer Time is a program dedicated to helping you have a healthier, more comfortable, livable house, living space, and workspace. Get your questions answered about remodeling, construction, paint, electrical, plumbing, air conditioning, property rental, and management, and anything that gives you a better house, building, work, or play space. It's Hammer Time. Sundays 2 to 3.
Hammer Time.
Trusted local news and talk. AM 1030 KBOI. We have our eye on news.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Steve Rivera, and this is Eye on the Ball, and I'm talking with former U of A great basketball player, Bob Elliott. I wanted to kind of pick your brain a couple times. How would you reevaluate or evaluate your career here? A fantastic career, leading scorer all time by the time you left. Very good. Good. How would you rate it?
I would rate it based on what the team did. And I think that you could see the progression of my freshman year here. We end up in second in the WAC. We're 19-7. Mm-hmm. Previous team was 16-10.
Predicted to finish that high? Superseded that?
I don't remember. But mm-hmm. This I do remember. Back then, there weren't 64 teams in the NCAA tournament.
That's true. There were like 32.
Oh, okay. And the rule was if you hosted a regional, you could not play in the NCAA tournament unless you won your conference. New Mexico won the conference. And we're sitting there. We couldn't go to the NIT.
Mm-hmm.
So, consequently, we're sitting in the stands watching in McHale that infamous game between UCLA and Dayton. Like three overtimes.
Uh-huh.
And we're sitting there saying, you know, we could play with these guys. But you came in second, you weren't eligible.
Wow.
So the first year, we didn't go anywhere. Second year, they started a thing called a commissioner's tournament. We played in that. Third year was the Elite Eight team.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth team, we made the NCAA tournament and got upset by, I think it was Southern Illinois.
Yeah, with the Salukis.
Everybody found out about a guy named Mike Glenn that they call Stinger.
Yeah.
We found out directly.
Right. Did you have a couple injuries on that team? Weren't you hurt?
I played my entire senior year left-handed.
You talked about that. Could you explain that to the people who are listening? Because no one kind of knew. You were trying to hide that injury.
Oh, I did hide it. That could not happen today with social media.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 weeks prior to the season starting, I twist my knee and ultimately found I had torn cartilage.
Which knee?
It was left knee.
That plays a factor.
Yeah, it was my left knee. Mm-hmm. So if you're playing ball and you want to jump, if you're right-handed, you want to jump off your left leg.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the main thing was stay off the left leg as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so that meant going to my left hand and jumping off my right.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the season, I went to St. Mary's at midnight under a different name. They did the scope. I got the three little, you know, stitches to show where they fixed it. And then at about 5:45, I remember they took me out a back door. What I remember was whoever the anesthesiologist was.
Mm-hmm.
Had just bought this brand new convertible Rolls Royce. And he said, Bob, I'll take you home. I want you to ride in my car. And I'll never forget that car, like a convertible.
Yeah.
I said, this thing was smoking. And I ran this guy maybe about 10 years ago. He said, do you recognize me? I said, I'm sorry, sir. I really don't. He said, I'm the anesthesiologist that took you home. I said, oh, you the dude with the drop top Rolls Royce? That car was smooth. That was nice.
Yeah. And no one found out.
Nobody found out until. I don't think anybody ever found out because I still played.
Mm-hmm.
And since I was known as a right-handed person, they would try to push me to my left. So I get the ball on a low block. I'm going to take a step toward the middle like I'm going to shoot at my right. They're trying to force me to my left, which I'm saying thank you very much. I go to my left and shoot it because I was ambidextrous, so it didn't make any difference.
Oh, okay. I was going to say you probably became a better player because of it.
I was always ambidextrous.
Oh, okay.
That goes back to my junior high school coach, mm-hmm. guy named Andy Anderson. He would have somebody feed me in the post. There was a manager behind me with a broomstick. He throws the ball into me. He would holler left or right. I had to catch it and just turn like a half turn and shoot a jump hook
mm-hmm.
over the broomstick into the hole.
Yeah.
So I always was able to go left or right hand.
Yeah, okay. So now we're talking about your career and how you judged it. So you did fairly well as a team.
Yeah, I think we did very well.
So how would you over grade it overall?
Oh, I think at the time I would give it an A mm-hmm. because we established new markers for the institution.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody had ever gone to the Elite Eight. Nobody had ever gone to the NCAA tournament 2 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So we added some asphalt to the road,
right.
And then left there for somebody else to do something else to it. Like Coach Olson did, he took that, added more asphalt, took a national championship there.
When you guys left. When you guys have 76, 77, correct?
Yes.
It hit then Snowden kind of didn't want to recruit anymore. It kind of went down. What were your thoughts after you left?
Well, you know, everybody knew Coach Snowden did not like to fly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's stories of him when he was an assistant coach at Michigan that he would go ahead of the team in the Big Ten. You know, you figure you can drive.
Mm-hmm.
Even to Iowa, 12-hour drive, he would drive. The coach didn't like to fly.
Yeah.
Well, you can't live in Tucson, be in Tucson, Arizona, and trying to recruit and not fly.
Right. Well, eventually it caught up to him.
Oh, yeah, because if you can't, I mean, if a Lute Olson and a Dean Smith and Bobby Knight are in somebody's living room,
mm-hmm.
Coach Stone need to be in that living room also.
Yeah. So what did you think as the program started to kind of decline?
Well, you hate to see, if you really believe in the program, believe in the school, you hate to see anything go down.
Yeah.
And so when Coach Olson came, took it from that low point, it actually went lower after Coach Snowden left because Ben Lindsay came and took it. Everybody's like, oh, it can't get any worse. You know.
I was going to ask you about that. What, being an alum, not too far removed from your career from being an alum.
Right.
How did that year fit for you? Just as you were out and about in the real world, and then you see what happened that year.
You don't want to see your school, your former team go anywhere but up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just want to see them succeed. And so,
where were you in that time? Were you still?
I was back here. I had quit
NBA,
playing.
NBA
yep,
was
I
done.
Quit. I did 4 years of playing, and I was back here in town. And you hate to see that happen, but at the same time, you look at it, because Coach Snowden, I think, won 8 games his last year, and they say can't get any worse. Well, Coach Lindsay wins 4.
Yeah.
So right away, one of the major turnarounds in University of Arizona athletics, Cedric Dempsey.
Mm-hmm.
Ced becomes the athletic director, and you can chart it. You know, I'm an accountant type, okay? I look for trends. You chart it, and look what happened to the athletic department. He was so good that he goes and runs the NCAA.
Yeah, no. And a great guy.
Great guy. Brings in Coach Olson, and Coach Olson took it and took it to another. I used to love to watch Coach Olson's practices because he was a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one time he blows the whistle until everybody freezes. And they were talking about running a zone defense. And he was making a point. There was one guy who was one step away from where he should have been. And the point was this. If a guy's sitting there with the ball, on the right wing, he's looking past whoever's in front of him. Because
mm-hmm.
as an offensive player, you say, I can get by him.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You have to be in a position so when he looks up, it's like, oh, then I have to challenge this guy.
Yeah.
That makes the guy think differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're out of place – for a certain time and circumstance.
Yep.
You're not in the right spot.
He was a teacher first. Right. And that made him, I think, a very successful
coach.
So
you're talking, you had to be in your mid or late 20s at that time when he first arrived.
Yes.
Did you meet him right away?
Definitely met
him
right
away. And
what
did you think? Great hire, obviously.
Well, see, we had another history part with him, which was that same junior year. We played in the Rainbow Classic out in Hawaii. And he was the coach of Iowa.
Uh-huh.
They jumped out on us 42-7. We came all the way back and tied it.
Really?
Yes.
I never knew this.
And they had the ball for the last shot. They called Gilbert Miles for a pushing or holding foul on that shot, and Iowa got to shoot two free throws.
And you lost.
Well, we're sitting there. First of all, Gilbert Miles never came in the lane. How's he going to hold a call? He was always outside. So at that point, I was like, okay, you know, it is what it is.
Right. Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. I should have checked that if he had ever coached against Arizona at that time. So great hire and all that. So I kind of don't want to miss this opportunity before we go to break. But now the biggest thing, and you know, you mentioned his name earlier, Javier. He's talking about Al Fleming making the Ring of Honor.
Yes.
And you, I mean – we've talked about this a little, and
exactly.
we can spend days talking about this. But how does that fit with Al not being in it, one? And then we'll kind of go on the other side of the break talking more about you doing this.
I sent a letter to the athletic department last year. You know, I understand the rules for the ring, and you had to have like a major offensive statistics for 5 years or more. And I know that Al in the past never qualified because he had 2 of 3. He has the rebounds, and he had field goal percentage for more than 5 years. He never had a third one. They started talking about DeAndre Ayton, and they all of a sudden they did the research on double-doubles, which I think is a major positive offensive statistic.
Correct.
The career leader by far easily double-doubles is Al Fleming.
Sure.
So my letter to the athletic department was, if you're going to create this double-double statistic and pump it up and promote it, then at that point, Al Fleming deserves to be in the Ring of Honor because he now qualifies. Because you started another statistic on double-doubles.
Right. For almost the purpose of getting him in. Maybe not. I don't know.
No, they're basically what they were trying, I think what the athletic department was doing was talking about DeAndre.
Yeah.
And the fact that he was doing all these double-doubles as a freshman.
Sure.
And what he did for a single season and set the record.
Mm-hmm.
But what about a career?
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. And he was one of those guys, and everyone wants to talk about these rules that they have, and I understand that. But there's a lot of wiggle room, or not wiggle room, but they can kind of figure this out, especially with the big-time players.
Yeah, I don't think it's even a question now that they're going to sit there, because, you know, as a broadcaster, there's the game notes, okay? Mm-hmm. And they're pumping up every game note. DeAndre Ayton, here's how he's moving
up
in the double-doubles. Here he's moving up in the double-doubles. And it's like, hey, you started the statistic. To me, it shouldn't even be an issue.
How did the U of A respond?
They sent me a letter that said that we will send this on to the committee, and I haven't heard anything since.
Yeah, and you won't. You know that. Real quick, let's take a phone call because I think there's a surprise phone call. Yes, Rosalie, thanks for calling.
Hi, Big Pop.
Little bit.
How are you? Thanks for calling in. I have a question for you, too. This is your daughter?
Okay. Yeah, this is Marcus's wife.
Yeah, okay. Well, go ahead and get your question in before I get mine into you.
Oh, you know, it's more of a comment. I'm calling in just to say that, first of the Wildcat, I am a U of A grad, that we are so proud of our Big Pop. And secondly, as his daughter-in-law, absolutely proud of him. And not even the what he's done as a basketball player, but more so what he does for our Tucson community. And just wanted to say thank you, Big Pop, for all you do.
Little bit, one word.
That's right, I'm a little bit.
Hey, thanks for listening. I know we have the Elliott's probably listening all over the country. You guys are spread out all over, aren't you?
Well, when you have 4 children, all married, being the doting of fathers, just like my wife, all have college degrees. 3 have masters or better.
Uh-huh.
Rosalie on the phone actually has her PharmD. And then Brenton, who doesn't have his master's, but he's a major in the Army and served over in Iraq twice. He's trying to get his master's, but he's been a little, you know, diverted when he keeps taking these tours over in Iraq.
Saving America is probably a priority right now. Right. Hey, Rosalie, thanks for calling in, but I have a quick question. Is your way to heaven dealing with Marcus? Holy moly. The guy is one of the funniest guys on the internet, but he's crazy. Did she go? And that's all I have to say. That's all I have to say, because you're married to somebody who's very funny, but loco.
Oh, yeah. But you know what? That's Marcus.
I'm here, too. Yeah.
Oh, what?
I was going to ask you, Dad.
Slam.
I was going to ask you, Dad, and I told him before the show, I got to find a way to figure out how to talk about Marcus. Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, man.
Hey, Marcus, I saw the one. Steve, show me what you posted on Instagram about the Glade.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that. We'll leave it at that.
I'm a little crazy, I know.
we just have two little guests here that just want to say hi to their big top two. This is Emmy and Noah.
Nobos. Scoobylicious. Hey, baby.
Well, I should have you more often. I get callers, and I have a lot of callers coming in, a lot of family members. Hey, guys, thanks for calling in. Marcus, stay out of trouble, please.
I will try. I'll try my hardest.
Okay. Good to talk to you guys. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right, guys.
Love you guys.
That was a cool call. Cool call. But hey, Marcus is crazy. Let me tell you something. I love him. I love him on Instagram and Facebook. And I'm thinking, what's he doing today? Hey, let's go to break. We'll talk more about possibly getting into this Ring of Honor, because I think that's a big deal. I don't think it is. It's a big deal.
Hi, my name is Andrew Reeby, Director of Admissions at Desert Christian Schools, and I would like to invite you to Take Flight Night, our high school admissions event. Take Flight Night is designed for 8th through 12th grade students and their families and will be held Thursday, January 17th from 6 to 8 p.m. Come and meet our faculty, learn about our outstanding academics, and see firsthand how we pursue excellence in Christian education. Desert Christian is a comprehensive preschool through 12th grade ACSI accredited school. To RSVP, visit desertchristian.org.
Lexus of Tucson announces the newest arrival to its crossover family, the UX Urban Explorer. With a starting MSRP of just $32,000, the UX offers numerous active safety features and Apple CarPlay as standard features. The UX has the best turning radius, highest MPG, and lowest cabin noise of any crossover in its class. Get details and see it now at Lexus of Tucson. Experience amazing. Speedway in Columbus and at the Auto Mall.
Veterans, are you planning to file a VA disability claim? Get ready for a better way to file. The Decision Ready Claim program gets you a decision within 30 days after it's submitted. That's just 30 days for the benefits and services you've earned. Talk to your accredited representative or go to www.benefits.va.gov/DRC to learn more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
Sick of hearing America run down? Tired of divisive political attacks? Tune into America's Fabric and its positive message of what's good about America. America's Fabric expresses the truth that the fabric of a free government is woven from its citizens' knowledge and moral fiber. Listen to America's Fabric on KVOI, Sunday mornings at 8 a.m.
Trusted local news and talk, AM 1030 KVOI. We have our eye on politics.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Steve Rivera, and this is Eye on the Ball. I'm talking with former U of A great basketball player, Bob Elliott. I need more time. We got 10 minutes. I'm going to have to ask Mr. John C. Scott if I can borrow a half hour from his show. We have so much to talk about, John. I have Bob Elliott here. I'm running out of time. So let's talk about Al Fleming. Anybody else that would should be in, or maybe if they can figure it out, who could be in?
Well, I think the way that the rules are right now, it'd be hard to put anybody else from our era in there.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, times change, rules change, and so there was an article this morning talked about, you know, Alonzo Trier saying he'd be known as the greatest scorer at Arizona. I'm like, you got to do your homework. Because Cornell Norman averaged 24 a game, his first two, you know, like 23-9, 23-8 and whatever, and 24-2.
Without
any threes. Yeah. I still remember that game at BYU. Corn never came inside what would be the three-point line.
Mm-hmm.
And he knocked down one after another after another. That 44-point performance could have easily been 66.
Yeah.
But, I mean, times changed. I remember when I set the WAC scoring record. And I'm feeling nice. I'm feeling like, okay, I appreciate my teammates because they, you know, believed in me, got me the ball. I got a flood of letters from Wyoming because the guy's record I broke was Flynn Robinson, who when he played, freshmen could not play. So the letters all said the same thing.
Sure.
They need to put an asterisk next to your name because you're there for 4 years and Flynn did it in three.
Yeah, yeah.
Times change.
Sure.
You just go with whatever's going on.
So back in the day, you mentioned, Cornell, you had – other guys in that group, the Kitty Corps in that group, how would their game, the Browns, translate to today?
Well, Corn, you talk about a spot up three?
Mm-hmm.
All right, he's done. He's got an NBA career. See, that team, my freshman year, which was Eric, Corn, and Al's sophomore years, you know, talk about how things changed. So, you know, after that year, Eric and Corn went pro. But on that team I was on my freshman year, the first option was Corn. He's averaging 24 a game.
Mm-hmm.
The second option was Eric Money, who was basically your consummate point guard, 18 points, 10 assists.
Mm-hmm.
I was the third option. Al was the fourth option. So thank goodness Al was shooting 667% from the field because he wasn't getting so many shots.
Right, right.
Our jobs were to rebound. Corn's playing small forward. Corn never came inside the lane. So Al and I had to do all the rebounding.
Right,
which
right.
Still amazes me, Steve, that Al and I are 1 and 2 on the rebound list, and we played 3 years together.
Mm-hmm. Shared a lot of the wealth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But that was my man. He was one of my best men at the wedding.
Right. No, I tell you, I mean, that game translates now, especially in the spread offense where it's Steve Kerr-like where you live on the perimeter.
You got him. Then you got, you know, Eric, you know, had to control the ball. And like I said, 18-10 guy. That's what's made him so good. He could score, but he kept everybody else involved.
Yeah.
So wait, the game is spread out like that. Eric could have all that room to penetrate. He could shoot the shot, or he could kick it out to somebody for a score.
Yeah. So you're the first guy into the Ring of Honor at U of A. It's a big deal. And now you are in the Pac-12 Ring of Honor. We talked about that. Became 2 years ago, very apparent, very meaningful to you.
Very meaningful.
And the story to get in was also meaningful.
It is. It's something where, first of all, you know, I never played in the Pac.
Mm-hmm.
But the athletic director at the time was Greg Byrne. And I have a big thanks to Greg as the athletic director and Phoebe Chalk Wadsberg, who was on the staff at that time. And they did the paperwork. They were an advocate for me to get in. You know, Greg Byrne and I had history indirectly. We both had one of the same mentors, a guy named Charles Harris, who was the athletic director at Arizona State. Matter of fact, I call him Uncle Charles. For me, he was a grad student in Michigan when I'm coming through Ann Arbor as a high school kid.
Oh, really?
That's when I first met him. And we're both fraternity brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And so with Charles, he helped me in that my CBS radio gig, CBS TV gig for the NCAA tournament. Charles got me that job.
Mm-hmm.
But with Greg Byrne, he, you know, Charles, athletic director, Greg's dad was a well-known athletic director. So Greg, as the story goes, could have gone to Oregon or something where his dad was. No, he loved this girl named Regina. And she was going to Arizona State. So Greg's dad calls Charles and says, hey, my son's coming down there. Can you get him a job? Just maybe look out for him, et cetera.
Sure.
Gives him a job at the golf, you know, a Carson course and that. And so Greg called me when he got the job here. He said, hey, you know, let's go get a bite to eat. I just want to talk to you. And bottom line was this, regardless what's happened in the past, I'm with you. You're with me. I'm a Wildcat for life. Let's roll.
Mm-hmm. When you got that call, what'd you think after that conversation?
Well, Charles had already called me and said that he had talked to Greg and that Greg's going to be calling me.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that the call was coming and I'm okay with that.
Yeah. So, but eventually you got the call that you were going to get in, that you were going to get in.
And I remember because Greg was with the football team up in Corvallis. So it's a Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you know, your phone rings. You look at it and say, Greg Byrne. I'm like, why is he calling me? And I know he's up in Corvallis because it's the day before the game. And he said, just want to give you a heads up that You're going to be our nominee for the Pac-12 Hall of Honor. And just keep your schedule free during that Pac-10. He knows what tax season is. It's kind of tough in March.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so that's probably in the fall. But you get the call and you get in. I kind of lost my train of thought here. I remember it very well because I was with you at the time doing some interviews. Huge deal at the time. It was a huge deal when you were going to get in. But at the time, were you emotional when you got the call?
Well, again, I was emotional. I would be emotional anyhow.
Yeah.
But when you're sitting there on 80 milligrams of prednisone after 5 months of taking it on a daily basis, all you got to do is you could do anything and make me cry.
So who did he have to convince, Greg?
I don't know. I'd have no idea what the process is at the University of Arizona level. I just know that I got the call from Greg and that I was going in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, and it's a big deal.
It's huge. Yeah. It's a big time honor, without a doubt.
Right. Right. Well, it shows to the career. I think you're still number two on the scoring list, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, who have been the guys in your time since then that have really impressed you?
Well, Russell Brown.
I think he's underrated. Underrated.
Big time. He could pass. I mean, the dude had like four sets of eyes all around his head. Mm-hmm. It was unbelievable what he could do with a basketball.
And a guy who wanted to pass.
Yes, yes. I mean, I face it. You know, if Russ is around, I'm getting at least six or seven more touches.
Yeah.
He was very crafty. Larry Demick came on strong in his senior year. Yeah. Became the highest draft pick at that time for an Arizona player, number 9 in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Nels, you know, could shoot that three. And again, you're playing Russell Brown, so that's ideal for Joe, who's a spot up three.
Yeah. They'll find you. They'll find you. Yeah. Okay, since maybe in the Lute time and then maybe in the Sean's time, we have about 2 minutes left.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you got to start with Sean Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Local kid, very good player, good person. Steve Kerr, and with Steve, you know, he just was, I think he touched everybody his freshman year with that whole deal with his dad and that up at ASU, the way they treated him.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been so many players
Damon.
There have been so many players that have come through here that you just have to just enjoy.
Right, right. It makes you proud. I know you wear the Block A on your shirt a lot. I'm wearing it now. You're wearing it now.
Wildcat for life.
How big is that for you?
Well, I just enjoyed my experience here. I think probably the second best decision I ever made. First was marrying my wife.
I was going to take a guess. That would be my guess.
And so it's been good.
Yeah. And like I say, as you look back in your career, maybe you do it often, maybe you don't. But what a fantastic time you had at U of A.
I love the U of A. I love the community. It's been great for myself and my family. And so it's been a very good experience.
We have about a minute left, just maybe about 20 seconds for you. You're busy as all heck on 5 boards, still involved with the NBA, things like that.
Right, yeah. It keeps you – I like it because those type of corporate boards are intellectually stimulating. I mean, you're flying around, you're representing different companies, and there's some great discussions going on in the boardroom.
With a lot of smart people.
Yes.
Smart, athletic people.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's underrated as well. You have some great photos with some of the good old-timers. Lou Alcindor, I mean.
Kareem. Oh, yeah, Jack Kareem. One of my stops was in L.A.
Yeah, yeah.
And so
you lived during a heck of a good time. I mean, a time of change.
Yes.
A time of good sports. And now it's kind of, it's changed a lot since then.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Bob, for coming in. We got to have you in again at some point, maybe down the road in terms of the basketball season.
All right.
Yeah, a lot to talk about. I wish I had more time. Thanks, Bob, for coming in. A good week of shows. Tom, I think we're ready to call it a day this Friday afternoon. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next week.